Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the roiling rumours of war with Iran in the Israeli press, buttressed by remarks from the outgoing head of Israel's Home Front Defence, who expects a 30-day war on several fronts with only 500 Israeli casualties. A specialist on Israeli military and foreign policy at the Brookings Institution, Natan Sachs, joins us to assess the likelihood of an Israeli attack on Iran before the November elections. Then we'll get an Iranian perspective on the possibility of a war with Israel that Iranian President Ahmadinejad dismissed with bravado, saying Israel is too weak to face up to Iran's military. Rasul Nafisi, an expert on the Pasdaran, the Guardians of the Revolution, who are the power behind the Supreme Leader, joins us to discuss whether targeting the leadership and the homes of senior figures in nuclear and missile development, scenarios that are contained in a purported leaked Israeli memo, would result in regime change. Then finally, with Ann Romney telling NBC News that 2 years of taxes are all we are going to get from the Romneys, we will discuss what Mitt Romney might be hiding with Lee Shepard, a contributing editor to the influential provider of tax news and analysis, Tax Analysts. She just published a report at Tax Analysts, Your Mitt Romney Tax Issues Cheat Sheet. And joining us now is Natan Sachs, who's a fellow in foreign policy at the Saban Center for Middle East Policy at the Brookings Institution, where he researches Israeli foreign policy, Israeli domestic politics, and the Arab-Israeli conflict. A native of Jerusalem, he previously researched the intersection of Islamic, nationalist, and ethnic identities in Southeast Asia. Welcome to Background Briefing, Natan Sachs.
Thank you. Pleasure to be with you.
And the Israeli press are in a frenzy almost over a possibility of an attack on Iran before the U.S. elections. The largest selling daily newspaper, Yedioth Ahronoth.
Yes, Yedioth Ahronoth, yes.
They carried a story on Friday saying that Israeli Prime Minister and Defense Minister would like to attack Iran's nuclear sites before the U.S. election in November, but lack crucial support within their cabinet and the military. So where are these reports coming from? There seems like there's an awful lot of smoke, but I can't quite find the fire.
Yes, it's very hard to tell, and there's, of course, a deep reason for the smoke looking like it might be real fire. If the Israelis were trying to bluff and scare the international community into action, or perhaps even the Iranians into action, they would, of course, make it look very much like they were preparing for a real attack. After all, credibility is the core of a successful deterrence policy. But the Israeli press recently seems to be more and more convinced that Netanyahu and Barak, the two of them specifically, are quite serious about their intention to use military force to stop the Iranian nuclear program, but that they have a strong opposition both within their cabinet and especially among security officials present and especially past security officials. So there seems to be a conflict, and it's also inherent to the matter itself that it's hard to tell what is smoke and what is real fire.
So what are the objections that are being stated? Are these coming from leaks?
Well, we have a mixture of leaks, both probably from the defense minister's office himself, from Barak. Several journalists have been quoting on unnamed sources that seem to be Barak himself on the reasons for an attack. The reasons opposing it are varied. They start from the cost of an attack itself, and especially a retaliation by Iran and by its proxies in Lebanon and perhaps in Gaza, but especially Hezbollah in Lebanon, which is very much an Iranian proxy and has been funded by Iran for a long time. They also include skepticism about the capability of an Israeli attack to postpone the Iranian program for very long. Some estimates place it at only a year or two postponing of the weapons program, and there's a fear that an attack would galvanize the Iranians and give them some international legitimacy for continuing a weaponized nuclear program. On the other hand, the Israeli officials close to Netanyahu and Barak, who have been arguing for a strike, claim that a nuclear Iran would be far more dangerous than the dangers of a strike. And in particular, it would galvanize Sunni Arab countries, as opposed to the Shia non-Arab Iran, to acquire nuclear weapons themselves and create an escalation of nuclear armament in the Middle East, which would even further destabilize the region, which is under, of course, tremendous flux at the moment.
But those are the reasons largely why the international community is leaning on Iran, aren't they? Nobody wants a nuclear arms race. Obviously, the Saudis, if they couldn't build a bomb themselves, they might well buy one from the Pakistanis. So the writing's on the wall there. So when Denny Ayalon suggests that time for diplomacy is over, what is that based on? Because it seems to me there are two things are clear. One is that the threats from Netanyahu might well have galvanized the international community into action. Nobody wants the Straits of Hormuz closed and the entire global economy to crash. So that's happening on the one hand. But on the other hand, it does seem that there's a pretty unanimous, the P5 plus one, that's Russia and China, they're all on board, it seems, trying to get Iran to stop its nuclear program, or at least to declare what it's got so far. So where is the argument that this is not working coming from?
Well, the argument is sort of twofold. The first is that there's a feeling that the diplomatic and the sanction tracks are not effective or unlikely to be effective on the nuclear question, that the nuclear question is too important for the Iranian leadership that they would, in fact, and as we see, they are, in fact, risking continued sanctions for the nuclear program. In essence, the sanctions, some believe in Israel, might be useful in the very long term in destabilizing the regime in Iran. But the core issue is that the Israeli leadership doesn't think Israel has that long to wait. Israeli military capabilities are significantly smaller than those of the United States. And the Israelis, especially Ehud Barak, the defense minister, feel that there's a zone of immunity that Iran will be entering, or perhaps has already entered, in which Israeli military strikes lose their utility. The Iranian program is well defended, some of it very well defended. And Israel is, of course, far, and the military is relatively small compared to the United States. So the Israelis fear that the time is running out on Israel's ability to stop things by force, and that without the credible threat of force, the sanctions and diplomacy are meaningless. Opponents of the strike, both in Israel and elsewhere, think that regardless, the only ones who could carry out a significant strike that would actually cripple the Iranian nuclear program for longer than a year or two would be the Americans. And so that Israel should go along with the United States regardless, and in fact take risks that the United States will act even after a point in time where Israel can no longer act on its own.
And again, Natan Sachs is a fellow in foreign policy at the Saban Center for Middle East Policy at the Brookings Institution, where he researches Israeli foreign policy, Israeli domestic politics, and the Arab-Israeli conflict. He's a native of Jerusalem, and he previously researched the intersection of Islamic nationalist and ethnic identities in Southeast Asia. So the United States, according to military analysts that I've spoken with, they agree with that assessment that only the United States Air Force and the B-2 bomber has the ability to deliver some huge bomb that would be able to get to these underground facilities that the Iranians have, which they've didn't identify, but apparently there seems to be consensus that the fact that they're hiding something indicates that there may be something there. My understanding is that the Israeli capacity to cripple or delay is pretty minimal. Now, why would they take these massive risks if there's no clear sign that there would be any diminution of an Iranian program, and then you've got to calculate the enormous collateral damage which would be involved in, for example, changing the dynamics now with Syria and the Assad regime on the ropes, Hezbollah on the ropes, Iran on the ropes. That would all reverse, and they, just as Nasrallah became a champion after the last Israeli-Lebanese war, there's a chance that this may be a reprieve for Assad. So the downside's pretty clear, at least to me. What's the upside? What could they actually achieve?
Well, it's hard to know, and I would caution against speculation about what exactly is possible. A lot of what is happening is outside of the public news. Don't forget, for example, that some of the most important damage to reportedly some of the most important damage to the Iranian nuclear program happened through cyber warfare, things that we did not know about in real time, and there may be other things we don't know about right now. There's some in Israel that claim that the assumptions about an Israeli strike are misconceived, that Israel is actually capable of doing more than people think, and that the intelligence is quite good on the sites that need to be attacked, in particular a site in Fordo, near the holy city of Qom, where a lot of the enrichment is happening underground, and of course other areas of enrichment as well. But it is true that the utility is limited, in part by the ability of Israeli aircraft to carry bombs, but more importantly by their ability to carry out repeated sorties. Israel is quite far, of course, and refueling is not simple. It takes a long time. And to preserve the element of surprise, you'd essentially be looking at one sortie per plane. And so a significant part of the Israeli strike force, of the Israeli Air Force, would be utilized, and there's a limit to how much it can do, unlike the United States Air Force, which is much larger in terms of numbers, and as you said, has heavier planes, heavier bombers in particular, than Israel does. Nonetheless, the Israelis, in particular Barak and Netanyahu, seem to think that Israel can inflict some significant damage that would postpone things. And they also don't rule out, this may not be pleasant to hear, but they also don't rule out that it may have to be repeated from their standpoint, that we may be looking at a long conflict that would not necessarily end until an Iranian nuclear threat was removed one way or another. And so the prospect, if a strike were to be carried out, may be grim. There are some in Israel, though, that speculate that the Iranian response may not be as harsh as people think, because the Iranians would still have something to lose. In particular, they may not want to drag the United States into the conflict by, for example, closing the Strait of Hormuz, which may bring the U.S. into the conflict, or utilizing the full arsenal of their missile capabilities and those of Hezbollah in Lebanon. And so there are some in Israel who would wager that the response may be more moderate than people think, and that Israel's ability to strike and cause real damage to the weapons program is more significant than some foreign analysts estimate.
Again, I'm speaking with Natan Sachs, who's a fellow in foreign policy at the Saban Center for Middle East Policy at the Brookings Institution, where he researches Israeli foreign policy, Israeli domestic politics, and the Arab-Israeli conflict. In all of this speculation about an impending attack on Iran, which is the Israeli press are abuzz about at the moment, is there any talk of regime change, of targeted use of military power? We witnessed the Green Revolution in Iran that's been suppressed by the Revolutionary Guard Corps, who, for all intents and purposes, seem to be in charge of Iran. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton has referred to the Iranian leadership as a military coup. So is anybody calculating the possibility, whether it's real or not, that the embers burning under the ashes, as the Nobel laureate in Iran has described the Green Movement, is that a calculation that there's a possibility within Iran itself for the Iranians to get rid of this this very unpleasant government?
Yes, and that calculation goes both ways. Some who caution in favor of more time and letting the international community, and particularly the United States, take the lead, think that the only real hope in the long term is a regime change in Iran. And what replaces it may not be very friendly to Israel, but would be very different, one would hope, from the regime of the Ayatollahs, and would therefore be far less dangerous and less inclined, perhaps, to acquire nuclear weapons. But this argument goes both ways. Netanyahu himself has, in fact, claimed that an Israeli strike may hasten a regime change in Iran. Most observers disagree. Most observers think that a foreign strike by Israel or otherwise would galvanize the Iranian public around its leadership. Of course, it's very hard to know. Regime change, and especially organic regime change through demonstrations, is something that is inherently unpredictable, and it's very hard to tell whether the Iranians would rally around the flag if there was an attack, which they probably would do initially, but what kind of long-term effect that would have. Some of the argument in favor of waiting, though, or in favor of postponing the Iranian nuclear program even a little bit through a military strike, both rest on this assumption that buying time might allow for more kind of change from within in Iran. But to be clear, Israel has no plans of actually instigating regime change itself. It doesn't think it is capable of doing something like that. It's nothing like the United States in other instances.
Natan Sachs, let's turn to U.S. domestic politics. Of course, it's unavoidable to recognize that we're in an election here. And there's no question that relations between President Obama and Prime Minister Netanyahu have been less than cordial at times. And there, again, the speculation in the Israeli press from the Yedioth Ahronot article says, without citing sources, that some government advisers in Israel and the United States believe a pre-November strike against Iran might embarrass Obama and contribute to Romney's chances of being elected. There's no secret that there's a long and deep friendship between Mitt Romney and Netanyahu. This would really, isn't that extremely dangerous territory in terms of U.S.-Israeli relations, for the even the suggestion that Israeli leadership might be interfering in U.S. domestic politics? That's pretty incendiary itself, but it seems, at least in terms of the speculation in the Israeli press, to be a real possibility.
Well, I would caution against reading too much into that. There's always this kind of electoral calculation that people put to it. And it is certainly true that Netanyahu's relation with Barack Obama has not been very good, and that he naturally would be more inclined to close relationship with Mitt Romney, whom he knows, indeed, from their days in Boston when they were young. Probably their friendship is probably overstated by the Romney campaign, but they certainly do know each other from many years ago with the Boston Consulting Group. Nonetheless, I would caution against reading too much politics into the Israeli calculations. They are certainly very well aware of the U.S. timetable in terms of the election, and they might expect different U.S. policy after November. But I don't think the Israelis would risk an actual strike with an electoral calculation in mind, partly because it is very hard to predict what the fallout from such a strike may be. Some have claimed that the rise in oil prices, which would be likely, could affect U.S. elections. But, of course, if the U.S. were embroiled in some kind of conflict, it could also rally the American people around its leadership, which is the common effect of foreign engagement if it were thrust upon the United States. In other words, I wouldn't read too much into these reports. I think people are trying to attribute a little too much electoral calculation to the Israeli leadership.
But that's not to say that there hasn't been a parade of top Obama officials going to Tel Aviv, right? Secretary of Defense, the National Security Advisors, and others. There's an assumption that the White House is trying to restrain Netanyahu. Do you think that's fair and reasonable to assume?
Absolutely. There's been really a train of a stream of U.S. officials, and there have been many meetings, some of them publicized, some of them not. The U.S. administration is very much trying to caution the Israelis against the unilateral strike. And part of this goes back to the question of credibility. If the Israelis were truly convinced that the United States would stop Iran by all means necessary, including a military option, something that the President Obama, said himself at a speech to AIPAC earlier this year, if the Israelis were truly convinced that that was the case, they would much prefer that the U.S. take the military action rather than Israel if one was necessary, partly because, as I said, the military capabilities of the United States in this case are far superior to those of Israel. The problem is one of credibility. Ehud Barak was quoted recently as saying that it's very hard to predict what other powers' calculations will be in the future, and so that even if the United States today intends to stop an Iranian nuclear program, it does not have the same sense of threat that Israel does. In Israeli view, especially the view of Netanyahu himself, the Iranian threat is an existential threat, is an historic threat to Israel, even the Jewish people in his mind. And in this sense, the credibility of an Israeli threat is far greater than that of the United States, which may have many other interests in mind when the time comes, in Israeli estimation. And so as a result, Israel finds it harder than the Americans would like to believe the credibility of the ultimatum that President Obama set when he made it very clear that, from his point of view, containment was not an option. And as he put it, as President of the United States, I don't bluff, is the way he put it.
Well, just in closing, Natan Sachs, perhaps an unfair question, but I'll ask it nevertheless. If you were a betting man, what would you bet in terms of the likelihood of an Israeli strike on Iran before the November elections?
Well, I'm not a betting man, thankfully. I would say that I still believe that the chances are in favor of caution, but I think the chances of a strike are much higher than they once were. We're talking about a significant chance. It's very hard to estimate, partly because it depends really on the opinion of two people, of Netanyahu and Barak themselves. Despite all the disagreement in Israel that we hear about, and despite the differing opinions in the security establishment, no one in Israel suggests that the military would not obey a command by the government, or that Netanyahu and Barak could not carry this out if they decided to. And in these circumstances, it is, of course, very inherently difficult to figure out whether Netanyahu and Barak are bluffing and trying to get the U.S. to commit to a military strike or not. There are several observers, including here in Washington, who believe that this is an attempt to force the United States to commit to act on its own. And so if I were a betting man, I would still bet against an Israeli unilateral strike. But my confidence in this is much lower than it was. The voices from Israel are quite serious, and many serious people do believe that Netanyahu and Barak mean this.
Well, I thank you very much for joining us here today, Natan Sachs.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Again, I've been speaking with Natan Sachs, who's a fellow in foreign policy at the Saban Center for Middle East Policy at the Brookings Institution, where he researches Israeli foreign policy, Israeli domestic politics, and the Arab-Israeli conflict. A native of Jerusalem, he previously researched the intersection of Islamic nationalist and ethnic identities in Southeast Asia. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking about an expert on the Iranian leadership about how they feel about an Israeli attack.
Time and time and time we see these acts against humanity. While each for each and each world leader shed blood for what they each believe. On and on and on.